Now on Mitchell's Front Page, On the Road with Toby Hagen.
And we're just getting Toby Hagen on the line from Wheels Magazine to speak to us for the first time in 2017. And some of the things he'll be talking about include this ANCAP safety rating. I know we've spoken to him before, but sometimes it can be a little bit subjective. And one particular vehicle, which we'll get him to reveal in a second, has scored 2 stars out of a possible 5. I think it is 5, maybe it's 6. We'll ask him in a second. He's on the line now. Toby Hagen, good morning.
Morning, Mitchell.
Good to have you back on the program for the first time in 2017. I hope you had a fantastic break.
I did indeed, yeah, and great to be back here as well. So, yeah, all back into work now.
Fantastic. Well, tell us about this ANCAP safety rating. There's one particular vehicle which you can tell us about, which apparently got 2 stars. I think it goes up to 5, doesn't it, or is there 6 now?
Yeah, that's right. No, 5. So 5 is the maximum rating, and as you say, 2 stars. For the Ford Mustang. So this is a car that has been an unexpected, very good seller for Ford. They're selling about 600 or 700 of them a month, so almost 10,000 of them now in Australia. And it's, a bit of a shock, this 2-star rating. It's certainly something that obviously Ford's, I guess, a little bit ashamed about, given it is so low. There hasn't been a 2-star rating for about 3 years. The last vehicle to get one was a van out of China, so an LDV van, which is a bit of an unknown brand, and so for Ford to be lumped in the same sort of category is a bit of a shock, but they defend it by saying that the car actually crashes well, so it's got a decent crash structure. ANCAP would slightly object to that, given that they found that the dummy's heads actually hit the steering wheel on the dashboard, so that the airbags didn't appear to inflate correctly. They also had the door pop open in the side pole test, so a number of issues with that car, but also it got hammered pretty hard for not having so-called safety assist technology, so things like autonomous emergency braking, which can automatically brake the car, and that's becoming increasingly common these days.
Yeah, that's very, very interesting. And I think consumers are becoming increasingly aware of the safety rating system because we see those ads on TV, for example, that say, how safe is your car? And they tell you to make sure that you check the safety rating before you buy a car. So are people becoming increasingly vigilant and saying, if it's not 5 stars or 4 stars, I won't buy it?
Yeah, absolutely. So 2 issues there. One is there are a lot of governments and companies that will not buy cars without a 5-star rating. So they're basically saying, it needs to meet a certain level of safety, and they look at ANCAP as that level of safety. So particularly mining companies and so on have been fairly big on that sort of stuff. New South Wales Police in particular were looking at the Mustang as a potential pursuit vehicle, so I think that'll be off the list now. But I don't think they'll be queuing up to buy a 2-star vehicle. A number of things like that. And yes, you're right, in terms of private buyers, so the average punter's going to look for cars, they absolutely expect a certain level of safety. And look, a 4-star rating may not necessarily turn some people off, but people expect a certain level of safety these days, and they typically have it in the top 3 or 4 areas of consideration with a car. Obviously, value and styling and things like that are a big one, but they also expect a level of safety, and when they're not getting that, they could potentially turn away. So, I would have thought Ford would have to look at this. There's not a whole lot they can do overnight to try and fix it, but there is an update to that car coming next year. They've already said that some of those additional safety assist features will come on that update next year, and I dare say they'll look at the rest of the issues that ANCAP brought up and try and see what they can inject into the car.
I think we've spoken about this before, but to get 5 stars, has that standard improved over time? Because obviously a lot of these features that you talk about, like all the airbags and the emergency assist braking, they wouldn't have been around 5 or 10 years ago.
No, absolutely. So yeah, ANCAP every now and again updates what it expects to get a 5-star rating. So the most recent update, I guess, is focused very heavily on crash avoidance technology. So rather than the core structure of the car, they're looking at the ability of the car to avoid that crash in the first place. Not perfect in terms of the way they do it, but it's a step in the right direction in terms of looking at all those sorts of features. So it's a big one. But what appears to have happened here, the car was actually tested in Europe in conjunction with Australasian ANCAP. But what appears to have happened is Ford, it doesn't appear that Ford thought the car would be tested by ANCAP. So they've actually, it's been tested by a couple of safety organisations in America. including the National Highway Transportation Safety Administration, and over there it did reasonably well, but it appears that they've actually set the car up to pass those tests, which are a bit easier than the NCAP one, and maybe overlook the NCAP one in thinking that it would never be tested. So it's a fair old embarrassment for Ford, a two-star rating.
Absolutely. I mean, you would think that when you design the car, you could anticipate what sort of star rating it was going to get, because you'd put in the features that each star rating would require.
Yeah, 100%. And this is what car companies know, how their car will perform in these crash tests before they get there. We regularly go along to launches and the car makers will say, we anticipate a five-star rating. There was a Jeep, I think it was, years ago that they basically decided to engineer it for a four-star rating because the cost to engineer it any higher would have been too difficult. So, yeah, there's things like that that they know. And look, NCAP went to Ford a year or so ago to say, we want to crash test this car and can you help us out in terms of supplying vehicles? Turned out Ford wasn't too forthcoming in terms of helping out with that test. And it seems it's fairly obvious why. I think they would have had a quick look at the ratings and how it's done and said, this is not going to come up too good, so why should we help out? So yeah, it's probably a bit of an indication as to why organisations such as NCAP are important. I don't think they're the be-all and end-all, and I think there are faults with how they do the testing. But in this instance, it's showing up that car companies can absolutely develop a vehicle to pass certain tests. And if they don't want it, they don't worry about the other tests. So it's, as I said, a fair old embarrassment and, I guess, an indication of the importance of this independent crash testing.
And for you yourself, would you buy a car without these sorts of features, if you're putting your family in it?
Look, some of them I would, but things like, I guess, the autonomous emergency braking is becoming more important. It's still not common on all cars, but my biggest concern would be the issues with the basic crash structure and those airbags not inflating correctly and so on, because that is something you can't fix straight away. But for instance, one of the things that they look at is things like rear seatbelt reminders. Now, on a car like that, let's assume most people aren't going to use it as an everyday family car, and you can get around that by double-checking that the kids have done up their seatbelt. So things like that, as I said, I wouldn't be overly concerned with on a car like that, but the other stuff, I absolutely would be.
Yeah, it's amazing with those seatbelt reminders. It seems like every car has got them now, and it sort of happened overnight, but it's impossible to take off without having your seatbelt on and having a warning go off.
Well, having the warning, and that warning, the reason it's as annoying as it is partly because of NCAP, because they've stipulated they need it to be X volume and go on for so long before it's... to encourage people to put their seatbelts on. So, that sort of stuff. And you're right, seatbelt reminders these days in most new cars are at least in the first two rows of seats. And these days in a lot of three-row vehicles, so the big SUVs and so on, you're getting them also down to the back row. And I actually think that's more important in terms of, you put a kid in the third row, you can't see what they're doing with the seatbelt.
That's right.
But it's good to have a little symbol on the dash that tells you if they've got it on or off.
Spot on. I can say from experience it's very annoying if you're trying to get groceries home or something and they're on the seat and it thinks someone's sitting there without a belt.
Yeah, absolutely. I've had that too. And you try to find somewhere else to put it so it doesn't keep annoying you. Well, you just do the seatbelt up.
Just do the seatbelt up.
Sleeping. Yeah.
Now, you've just come back from South Australia. What did you do over there? Sorry, South Africa, I should
South
say.
South Africa. I'm sitting there thinking, when was I in South Australia? South Africa. Look, I've been over there driving a Porsche Panamera e-hybrid, so a bit of a mouthful of a name, but this is Porsche's, it's sort of a limousine. It's a fairly large Forder, obviously a sporty one. Comes with a hybrid drivetrain, so it's got an electric motor that it can drive up to 50 kilometres on electricity alone. So recharge it at home, drive it up to 50 k's on that, but to get the full performance, you need to run it in hybrid mode, at which point the twin-turbo V6 also chimes in, and then you get to 0 to 100 in 4.6 seconds, so much quicker in that regard. A big change of thinking the way they've done the hybrid this time around, where they're getting the electric motor to work a lot harder when you first take off, so from a set of lights and so on, they're bringing that electric motor into the equation a lot sooner, and it certainly performs better. I'm not sure, it's $250,000, I'm not sure if that's where I'd be putting my $250,000 into a Porsche, but it's still a decent car for what it is, and certainly a big step up on where Porsche's been with hybrids.
And obviously it's the whole debate between hybrids or just full-on electronic vehicles. Which one's more popular at the moment for consumers?
Oh, look, certainly hybrid, particularly in Australia. And what we're starting to see is a lot more of these so-called plug-in hybrids where, as I said, you can get about 50 k's from a charge, and then after that, it'll run on the engine or a combination of engine and electricity. And that's a lot more palatable for a lot of people because they don't get this so-called range anxiety when they think, when am I going to run out of electricity and where's my next charge? This way, they can run on the same old petrol they've been running on for years. And make sure that, you know, if they want, they can drive around Australia in it. So it's I guess it is a something we'll see a lot more of, partially because of regulations, particularly in Europe and so on, where there are some cities where you can't drive into the city without, or you have to drive into the city on electric power. So what you find is these cars are programmed. You can set them so that when you get to the outskirts of the CBD, you basically dial it up, run on electricity all through the CBD. And then drive out of town and use the petrol again. So it's it's a bit of a different way of doing it.
Now Tesla has set up a fantastic little store in one of the big shopping centres in Melbourne, and it's attracting a lot of attention. I've been there myself, and the salespeople are very, very effective at selling the brand. It's interesting to discuss with them, you know, what it's like driving from Melbourne to Sydney, because they say it's all good with the supercharger network. But I saw in one video on YouTube when someone actually did drive it that they were about to run out of power, I think, towards Albury Wodonga, and had to pretty much limp there by the end of it. So it's interesting to see what the sales pitch is versus the reality sometimes.
Yeah, that's right. And look, I've had that similar thing. I was driving over in America in a Tesla about a year and a half ago, and similar thing. Once it figures out, because it knows where all the charging stations are, like it's programmed into the car, once it figures out that you may not necessarily make it, it actually pulls back power from the electric motor. So as you say, you've got to limp in and come in a bit slower and so on. So it's look, a little bit frustrating, and certainly there is a long way to go with this electric tech, and it's as good as that supercharger network is. As you say, it's not perfect.
And did you see the video in the Netherlands of the Tesla car that sort of predicted the crash before it happened, because the salespeople were all over that the week that I was in there?
Yeah, right. No, I haven't seen that. But look, certainly Tesla's been very active in terms of crash avoidance technology, autonomous technology. So all their new cars have got this, semi-autonomous function. So you can drive up the Hume Highway, for example, or the Geelong Freeway, and run hands-free for quite a bit of time, and the car will do everything, the steering, the braking, the whole lot, which a number of other car makers have too. Mercedes-Benz with its E-Class has got a bunch of that stuff as well. But there's obviously, you know, the things aren't perfect, and I had a Tesla a couple of months ago that it made a few mistakes while on this so-called autopilot system. You absolutely want to be over or looking what it's doing and ideally reacting to the situations that it can't necessarily pick up.
Yes, he wouldn't want to be reading a book or whatever while you were driving along on autopilot.
No.
But go and check out this video. You just YouTube Tesla predicts crash or something, and a car makes a lane change, and it predicts the crash is going to happen up in front before it even happens, and it's slams on the brakes, and if it was a regular human, you'd probably be involved in the crash. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Now, the Detroit Motor Show, tell us about that.
Yeah, look, Detroit Show this year was a bit different to Detroit's past. Typically, you go to what is the most significant North American motor show. Typically, you go there expecting, obviously, a big spread from the big three, Chrysler, Ford, and General Motors. This year, almost nothing from any of them. So they basically did some relatively minor model reveals. Ford announced a few interesting things, so things like the return of the Bronco nameplate, for example, which is quite significant because some of the testing of that vehicle is actually being done at the Yuyangs, at the Ford Proving Ground there just north of Geelong. So it's an interesting car for Australians, and one that we're expecting in about 2020 to finally go on sale. So, that, as I said, return of the Bronco name. But, yeah, nothing from the big three. So it was up to the imported car brands to put on the big show. So Audi, for example, showed off a car called the Q8, which is a big luxury electric SUV or partial electric SUV. That's only a concept for now, but could possibly go into production. We also had Volkswagen with a car called the ID Buzz. Now, this looks like a modern version of the Volkswagen Combi, but it's got an electric motor in there and a very different way of thinking about things. Another really interesting car was the Kia Stinger. So this is a car that's going to be on sale in Australia later this year. It's got rear-wheel drive and the option of a high-powered V6 twin turbo engine. So it's going to make a lot of power and potentially step into the void being made by when we see the Ford Falcon gone and the Holden Commodore gone later this year. So it'll be an interesting car, and there could be a lot of people who were previously buying V8 Commodores looking at this thing saying that might do the trick.
Now, the Wheels Car of the Year is going to be announced, is it this week?
It is, yeah, Wednesday night it gets announced, so that'll be happening in Melbourne, so I'm heading along to that. I was lucky enough to be a judge on Car of the Year, which took place last year, so it's, the big announcement on Wednesday night.
And we won't pressure you into revealing who won exclusively here on The Pulse, but just tell us about the judging process and some of the criteria that you might have been looking at.
Well, look, a very big week of judging. So it goes on for about 5 or 6 days. It actually starts down we were at the Ford Proving Ground, the Yuyangs, and did a lot of testing there. Then we head down into Gippsland and do more testing there. So it's a bit like Groundhog Day. You do a lot of the same thing, obviously, in a whole bunch of different cars. We had about 50 cars there, a bit over 50 cars there. It's just go through a whole process of looking at all the different criteria. So obviously value is one thing, functionality, how well it does its job, all those sorts of things are taken into account to try and work out what is the most significant new arrival over the past 12 months.
Yeah, well, very good, and we'll look forward to finding out what the outcome is on Wednesday. And thank you very much for being with us this morning. We'll catch up with you again in a fortnight.
Sounds good. Thanks, Mitchell.
Good on you, Toby Hagen there from Wheels Magazine, our motoring correspondent. Always look forward to having him on the program.
Mitchell's Front Page with Mitchell Dye. Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 till 11 on 94.7 The Pulse.